Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks again for joining me this week. Got another great show for you with an interesting guest. And before we get started, I want to say to all of my law enforcement, both past and present, I am collecting stories for the next edition of True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them. I want your story. Write it. It can be of anything. It can be funny. It can be sad. It can be life-changing. Whatever story you want to write, go to my website at truebluestories.com. Truebluestories.com. It'll tell you about what I'm looking for, what the requirements are, and you can submit a story right there. We have a very interesting guest in the interview room who will talk about how important writing was to him and his post-traumatic stress issues, and how important putting those words onto paper meant to him. So let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Last week, I talked at length about the California lawmakers' introduction of a new statute that they're trying to put into law. And it changes the way that law enforcement officers are judged when it comes down to deadly force situations. What they want to do is, just to recap real quick, because it has to do with some of the stuff in current events that's going on this week, is that this is in the wake of the Sacramento shooting of a man who, instead of surrendering, putting his hands up and showing his hands as officers directed after being cornered after doing a bunch of burglaries, he raised his cell phone, and the officers in the darkness thought it was a gun. They opened fire and killed him. So the Legislative Black Caucus in California came out and did a press conference that was one of the most stunningly biased and prejudiced against law enforcement I've ever seen. And they're trying to change the law from the reasonable officer rule to what's called the necessary force rule. Let me tell you quickly what that means. Right now, in every state in the union, and this was decided by the Supreme Court, if a police officer uses deadly force against someone, he is judged by, would a reasonable officer believe from those circumstances that that officer faced that he was facing a life-threatening situation? Doesn't mean that the actual situation actually existed, and perfectly attuned to that is the incident that happened in Sacramento. Instead of raising his hands and showing his hands like he was directed, the subject went into what looked like a shooting stance, and he was using his phone. Now, these officers used what they felt to be the proper force in shooting him, because they felt that their lives were in danger. In fact, one of the officers actually yelled, "Gun, gun, gun." Now, what the state of California Legislative Black Caucus wants to do is change that law so that it's necessary force. What does that mean in reality? That means that if someone takes a look at afterwards and sees that, say, the individual had a fake gun, it was a replica, and didn't really fire, that he really didn't face that officer didn't use the proper force, because the threat never really existed. Now, the cop would never know that, but this law would make it so easy to prosecute every cop that gets involved in a shooting, basically, and open them up to civil litigation. It is incredible. That's why this is such an important issue. And a couple of more high-profile shootings took place this week that I want to reiterate as far as perfect examples of why this, if this law passes, it's going to kill cops and it's going to kill citizens, because it is going to create hesitancy on the part of law enforcement to use force even when it's completely appropriate, because they will be judged not on what they are seeing and what they are perceiving, but what comes out as the investigation later down the road. So let me talk about a couple of those shootings right now. This just shortly after this Stephen Clark shooting, there was a shooting in New York City. Now, what happened was police got 911 calls, multiple 911 calls, about a man walking down the street, heavily urban area, and he was pointing a gun at them, and he was threatening them with it. So officers responded, and they saw the individual. They ordered him to, and they saw that he had what appeared to be a gun in his hand. It was a silver object. It had a barrel. And when he refused to drop the gun and pointed at them, they opened fire and they killed him. Okay, so it turns out that it was not a gun. He had fashioned a pipe into looking like a gun. Okay, now this guy had mental issues. There's no doubt about it. The officers didn't know that. They have to perceive the threat and then act appropriately. Now, there was a tremendous amount of video footage of this because all these stores were tracking him as he is walking down the street, and he's literally pointing the gun at people, and you see them cowering, and it looked like a gun. I mean, when I looked at it, there was no doubt in my mind, hell, this is a gun. Well, it wasn't. And so this is the perfect example of if the necessary force bill were passed and these officers faced a tribunal based on that change of law, these officers could go to prison. Now, you know and I know that this is morally wrong. And right now, it's legally wrong as well. But if the Legislative Black Caucus in California gets its way, this is going to pass. This is something that I cannot stress enough. If you are in California, you need to get active. You need to write to your assembly person, your congressperson, and tell them that this is insanity. If we don't do this, if people of common sense don't become active when it comes down to the passage of an insane law like this, which is designed to be nothing but anti-law enforcement, it will cost police lives, and it will also cost citizens' lives. And this is a perfect example. Now, not only that one, but then another incident happened, and this was another shooting, and this time it was in Portland, Oregon. Now, I've spoken about Portland, Oregon a bunch of times, because that's just California North, you know what I mean? They have such incredibly liberal policies. The mayor of Portland is a megalomaniac who wants to run everything. There have been probably four different police chiefs in the last couple of years, and every one of them has kowtowed to this guy and tried to do his bidding. But they now have a chief up there who is was formerly with Oakland PD, and she was on the staff. Command staff of Oakland PD, which is truly one of the most screwed up, administratively screwed up departments in the country. And they hire her as the chief of police. Her name is Outlaw, appropriately enough. Well, her officers respond to a, this guy went on basically a crime spree. He had a knife. He threatened people with it. Then he did a carjacking. Then he did another attempted carjacking. And after he jumped out of one of the carjacked cars, he ran into a building where there was an AA meeting going on. And then he started threatening people with the knife at the AA meeting. The police were Johnny on the spot because they had been following him in relation to his crime spree, and when they went into where the AA meeting was, somebody was taking video, of course, as normal. There was plenty of also later on police body cam footage. They spotted this guy and they tried to take him utilizing low lethal. That is, they tried a beanbag gun. Beanbag guns are shotguns that have shotgun shells loaded with lead shot that is in a beanbag, basically. And it hurts like hell, I got to tell you. But they tried to deploy it against this guy and take him without shooting him. Well, it, unfortunately, as in many of the lower lethal types of munitions, this was it just simply didn't work. It didn't stop this guy. Similar to tasers, tasers don't always work either. So they beanbagged this guy a couple times, didn't do any good. He started walking towards the officers. There was a whole bunch of cops there. I think there were eight cops. They all opened fire at the same time, and they killed him. Now, unfortunately, once again, we have protesters that are saying that the police didn't act appropriately. And, you know, once again, we have this necessary force a law that that if it gets passed, people can say, well, look, you know, he had a knife. Why was it necessary to shoot him? And the reason I say that is because, believe it or not, this was a case that just came out of California that was similar. In this case, this is a case that went just the opposite way. This case came out of San Diego. The police were responding to a man with a gun call, and it had a physical description in an apartment complex. When they got there, they saw a guy on a balcony that resembled the description of the man that they got a report upon. So they aimed their firearms at him. They told him not to move, and at one point they gave him a direction to come outside and talk to them, and he refused. It turned out that he was not the suspect. And this is not an unusual set of circumstances. People fit a description of a crime that took place, and when law enforcement makes the stop on them, they use their weapons to make sure that their lives are not in jeopardy in order to control the situation. That's what happened here. Well, this man filed a lawsuit against the San Diego Police Department. And when a judge got this case, instead of tossing it out, he said, well, you know what? I think this guy's got a case. I think it's a violation of his civil rights that they mistakenly held a man at gunpoint while investigating a death threat and man with a gun call. This is the type of insanity that law enforcement is going to have to face. If you can get sued for every time you point your weapon at someone, I got to tell you, they may as well just throw in the towel and not do any policing at all, because you will often, as a police officer, use your weapon to control someone's movements, or because you have a belief and a reason to believe that the individual may have committed a crime that he may be armed. The police respond to these type of calls on a continual basis. And if we say, okay, you know what, it's okay to sue the police every time they point a gun at somebody, but the police may as well just go home, pack it in. And this is a court decision that needs to be fought. And I hope that they bring this up to the Supreme Court, because this seriously needs to be dumped. This will change law enforcement in a lot of negative ways and make it much more difficult and much more dangerous to be a cop. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I don't know about you, but I want to look my best and feel my best. And that means that I got to eat right. I have to work out. It makes me feel good. But, you know, when you get to a certain age, there are some very stubborn places that are very difficult to lose weight on. You know, for a guy, it's his stomach and kind of his flanks, and a woman, well, we know where that is. But I have found an incredible answer to this problem. And I'm going to admit to you that I did this procedure. It's a place called Bell Medical, B-E-L-L-E, Bell Medical, and they're in Utah, and they're also in Las Vegas. And they do body contouring, basically. It is absolutely pain-free. It's amazing. You're awake during the entire procedure, and you can literally lose 3 to 5 inches off of your belly and other places in just an afternoon. Now, if that sounds crazy, I got to tell you, I know it's true because I did it. And it is incredible. I'm 3 weeks into my procedure. It was virtually painless. There's a little bit of bruising. And I got to say, I'm looking good. In fact, if you contact Bell Medical, go to bellmedicalvegas.com, B-E-L-L-E, medicalvegas.com. They can show you before and after pictures, and my pictures are in there. You will not believe it. It is it's the best way to lose stubborn body fat that you may work for years, months trying to get rid of. They'll give you a free consultation. You got nothing to lose. It's amazing. BellMedicalVegas.com. Check it out. If you are a law enforcement officer in the United States, or if you are a company that hires off-duty law enforcement officers for, say, security jobs, traffic jobs, things like that, you want to listen to this advertisement, because this is a company that's out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the states in the United States. They're called Law Enforcement Specialists Incorporated. And they have a really interesting business model. They take police officers. If you're interested in working extra duty jobs, and who isn't, right? I mean, it's hard to make ends meet on simply your salary. Contact Law Enforcement Specialists, and they will put you on the list for extra duty jobs, just like you go through your own agency to get extra duty jobs. Well, they do it for you, and they work with your agency. It's really interesting. They're the only company I know of that does this. So if you go to offdutypoliceofficers.com, you can find out all about this company, and then you can also contact them and make yourself available for extra duty assignments. If you are a company that hires off-duty cops, then you want to do the same thing. Law Enforcement Specialists. They're out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States. And check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. And this is a great opportunity for both law enforcement and people who hire them to kind of make things easier. So check them out. That's Law Enforcement Specialists at offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement in the interview room, is Mike Summers. Mike is a retired lieutenant with the Burbank, Illinois Police Department. He spent more than 30 years as a law enforcement officer. And now he's an author. He's written several books. We're going to talk about that. He's written Teardrop for Rose and The Puzzle Pros are his two latest books. And he's also been a contributor to, in fact, this is where I met Mike. He contributed to my compilation, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them. Mike, welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Randy, it's great being here, and I appreciate giving me some time. And You were just talking about the True Blue books. Actually, I authored the second one. I was submitted a story to the second True Blue, Protect and Serve, and I wrote a story about a fellow officer who was killed on Thanksgiving going on 14 years ago. And you mentioned my one book, The Puzzle Pros, a detective story. I actually dedicated it to him.
Yeah.
And it's just strange how things kind of circle around. But I appreciate you having me.
Well, you know, you spent, you know, a similar amount of time in law enforcement as I did. You know, 30 years, that's a long, I mean, it's the majority of your adult life.
Yes.
You know, you retired as a lieutenant, as I did. And so, you know, those similarities exist. And then you chose writing as an outlet. Let's talk about that. You know, a lot of law enforcement officers, they bottle up everything that they see and all the emotions for many, many years, and it can't help but have, an effect on you. How has writing been an outlet for you?
You know, Randy, over the years, like you said, you see a lot as a police officer. You do a lot. And a lot of the stuff you see and a lot of stuff you do are mainly dealing with the dark side of society, and it's negative. And it causes anxiety. And I suffer from anxiety. I have since I was a young adult. And so as years go on, as things start piling up inside, you know, the anxiety seems to obviously increase. And I've known a lot of officers that have gone to alcohol or other outlets, but for me, it became writing. It was a way to get my mind off of some of the things I've seen in the past. I was a detective for many years, so I saw, like you, saw a lot of things that people shouldn't really see, normal people shouldn't see. And I always had I was fortunate enough to be able to take it in and let it go. But there comes a point after so many years that it's not that easy to let it go. And I found that writing, and actually your first book, your first True Blue book, was kind of like my start. I wrote a short story for that. It was an incident that I was involved in, and I should be dead. But as I was recovering from that incident, I just got the bug. And shortly after, I saw an article about your book and accepting stories, and it's kind of started me writing. And it was, I tell you, through the years, I've written a lot of short stories, and it's just, like I said, it's an outlet. It helps you get things off your mind and actually blocks other things from getting through. So I love it. You know, I don't like reading, you know, but I love writing. So it's
that's interesting.
Yeah, I've never read a complete novel in my life. Now, I've gone through grammar school, high school, college, and I just couldn't read. You know, when we had an assignment with about a novel or a book, I would just skim through a couple pages or, you know, at the end of the chapters and take notes and things like that. But I've never honestly read a complete novel, but I love writing, you know, and it's, for me, it's an outlet. And it's just something I think a lot of police, because of our experiences, need to get into, especially if you have any kind of demons inside you that are troubling you. It's a great outlet, you know, and just for, at least for me.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, you know, I never intended to be a writer, and what started me on the path was a particularly dramatic incident where I saved the life of a one-month-old baby who had been shot in the face in a drive-by shooting. And it was such an emotional experience that night I felt like I had to write that story. And I didn't have anything to do with it. I just threw it in a drawer somewhere until the idea for True Blue came along. And then I asked for stories from cops from all over the country. You gave me a great story. In fact, for my listeners, we're going to do another edition of True Blue. So, you know, Mike, I'd love another story from you. And if for my listeners out there, if you are a active duty, retired, or former law enforcement officer, go to truebluestories.com and see how you can submit a story as well. But I couldn't agree with you more that began, it began also a personal journey. You know, you learn about yourself when you write as well.
Sure. A lot of times you learn about how screwed up your the way your mind thinks, and you know the what you think about and how you come up with some of these ideas. Like the first book, my first novel, Teardrop for Rose. I mean, if you look at that book, it has nothing whatsoever to do with police work. It's a science fiction, good versus evil, end of the world, you know, kind of thing, end of humanity type of book. And it's just, you know, it's just amazing how your mind, what it does to shield a lot of the stuff that's maybe negative and the stuff you come up with, you know, and think about. And, you know, it's, but the second book, now the puzzle prose, that's kind of like, it's totally fictional, but it was nice because I can take some of the characters that I used to work with and kind of put them in there, not by name, but you know.
Sure.
So a lot of my friends would read the book and they'll laugh. I know who this one is. I know who that one is. So, it's just been fun. It's like, and if it weren't for writing, then I tell you, man, and again, I'm going back to your the first True Blue book, you know, police stories by those who have lived them. That got me going. And that was a time when I was still healing from a pretty traumatic experience I was involved in. I was blown up in a hostage negotiation thing, and it just a great outlet, and it just did wonders for me, and it's still doing now that I'm retired and have kind of nothing to do. This occupies my time even more now, where I would sit around and, you know, maybe look at TV and just keep thinking and more depressed, but it's a great outlet. So to the police out there listening to this, or former police, just try it. It doesn't hurt, you know. I mean, and you're the man, so start sending your stories into Randy.
Exactly. Well, you know, one of the things that I found when I was a young officer, and Joe Wamba was my hero, because Joe Wamba was the first police officer that I know that literally broke into the major mainstream market for writing. And and I thought that what, you know, his books were so incredibly realistic and captured the characters. I mean, when you just spoke about, yeah, it's a fictional book, but it's based on people that you knew. That I think that all good writers take their own experiences, and that becomes part of the, you know, that becomes part of the character development.
Sure. I mean, without a doubt, Randy, like I said, if you were not a police officer, I think tried to write these detective novels, you know, like I said, I'm not much of a reader, but I know there's a lot of authors out there that do write police books. I don't know how many of them are actual police or were actually police officers or whatever, but
not
unless
many.
You can really
not
draw.
Many. And it's funny you say that. I have a difficult time reading. Yeah, I can pick up a book that, you know, that's a law enforcement based book, novel, and you can pretty much tell right away if somebody was a cop or wasn't, and I have a difficult time, you know, because you recognize some of the, you know, the inaccuracies, and I just don't have any interest in it after that.
Yeah, you know what's kind of funny, Randy, is when I started writing these books, it was these two novels that are just out, that I just published recently. When I started writing them, it was years, many years ago. And through the years, I would bring them up on the computer and I'd do a little more work, you know, a little more work on this one, a little more work on that one. Change this, delete that, change this. And this has been going on over the years. And it's just amazing how I have a couple of friends in the community that I live in. And they've been pushing me to finish these books, so that's basically why I finished them, because they said that they thought they were really good. So it was funny going back over them and rewriting them, because I had parts in there about cassette tapes being used, and this is supposed to be taking place like now. You know? So I'm looking at the books. I'm going, oh my God, I gotta read these things and actually make all these changes. And so it's kind of humorous when I was going through them and, just making the changes and how technology has advanced so much in really not that great a period. I mean, it hasn't been all that long, but just everything. I mean, I remember when I started the job, we had manual typewriters and those phones with the black antennas and the how everything has changed. And it was kind of funny going back over the books and seeing the modifications I had to make because of all the changes in technology. But that just kept my mind going even more. So it was kind of
this
there.
Process, this process has taken years. I didn't realize that. So how long did it take you to write this novel?
Well, actually I started these way back when. I told you, I was injured, a pretty serious injury on the job.
Let's talk about that and how that incident affected the rest of your career. I mean, you may as well fill in the audience about what took place. It's a very dramatic story.
Well, it was a barricaded situation where a gentleman had a domestic quarrel with his wife. She wanted to get divorced, so he went in the garage. He was a contractor, and he had a bunch of those big 40-pound propane tanks. And he turned them on, and I was just a watch commander doing roll call, and I was also a negotiator. And the street sergeant called me out there and said, "We got a situation here." And he says, "It looks as though this guy's got a gas grill in the garage, and he's got the propane turned on." But anyway, I arrived at the scene and I approached the jealousy window in the garage, and he was walking back and forth, and I had him open the windows. I just, motioned for him to open the jealousy windows, and we were face to face, and he had a torch igniter in one hand, a cigarette lighter in the other, and the gas was just streaming out. I mean, my eyes and my throat were like they were on fire.
Oh boy.
So I kind of motioned to get to start evacuating the neighborhood because this was going to be pretty nasty. And so we talked for a while, and he ended up turning the tanks off, and I think I gained his confidence a little bit. He gave me the torch igniter, and we talked and talked, and he heard a noise, and he thought that we were going to try to, make entry into the garage, and he started turning the tanks, and I'm like, "Hey, relax, everything's cool, just, turn it back off." And so he did again, and we talked for about 15, 20 minutes, and he was held a cigarette light up in front of his face, and he started rolling the wheel real slowly. And I said, "If you do that, I have a family, you've got kids in there." I said, "You don't want to go this way." So he turned around, I'm thinking, I got him. And then he turned around and held the lighter up, and boom, that was it. So the fire department was staged a block away. They said the roof went up like 20 feet in the air. Window that I was standing in front of should have took my head off. It just cut my elbow off and went over the house and a block away. And
What went over the house?
The window I was standing in front of.
Oh,
should
really?
Have cut my head off.
Oh my goodness!
Somehow it went over my head. It cut. I must have went backwards. It cut the tip of my elbow off. Went over the house and on the next block. But anyway, the flame hit me. The explosion hit me. I was on fire. And I think, after you go through these things, and when you think about, I should have been dead. There was stuff embedded in the house behind me. This is a setup. It was a house, a yard, and a garage that should have impaled me. And just, I don't know, it's just strange. But, you start thinking of these things, and I think that adds a little bit of anxiety after a while. And that was kind of, I wanted to just take my mind off of that because, he ended up surviving. He was super critical for quite a long time, but he ended up surviving, and I am obviously here, so I made it. But it's things like that cops go through all the time, and unfortunately, people don't hear about those things. But I tell you, you kind of develop a little maybe a post-traumatic stress disorder from certain things that we do in police work.
I would think that dealing with, I mean, you're talking about an absolutely life-changing experience, both the physical attack on you and how long were you in treatment for that?
Well, I was in treatment for months, but I was in intensive care for, I think, 4 days.
Wow.
Then in a regular room for three, and I ended up, they discharged me, but you know, burns are no fun. They, no matter what they give you, you unfortunately, when they do their scrapings and their peelings, they can't put you under.
Oh my God!
So because they want to gauge your, they want to gauge your pain. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's kind of weird. You're laying there and two times a day, and they're scraping this, you know, the dead skin off you. And they were talking about skin grafting and doing all this stuff. So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on, and you know, and just it takes its toll, you know, and I didn't want to let that run my life. And actually, when I was, you know, healed and everything, I went back to work just like normal, and it was fine. But I'm telling you, Randy, during that time is when I started taking the writing. I mean, I wrote a million short stories. I got short stories all over the place. But it just started my mind, you know, going in different directions about writing. And I started writing The Teardrop for Rose, which is totally opposite of the police novel. And then when I, you know, I was kind of writing the puzzle prose and A Teardrop for Rose at the same time. So my mind was, shows you what my mind was kind of going through. Let's see, I feel in the mood of writing something about police work today. And I would sit down and I'm in front of the computer and start doing the police one. And then, you know, I feel like that is a little sci-fi today. So I, you know, just, I don't know, I guess I just have a vivid imagination. And I just think that, that for me anyway, writing was a great, great, I don't know. It just helped me along so much.
Sure. No, without a doubt. Now, did you ever get treatment for post-traumatic stress?
No. You know, I just, you know, you kind of hide things when you do the job, because I think if that were the case, you know, all police would have to go on foot. It was offered, but I felt okay at the time. And, you know, it's like one of these things that it doesn't hit you like right away, because my mind was occupied with things. I wanted to get back to work right away, because this was right after I was injured on September 3rd, 2001, which was, you know, a week before 9/11.
Right.
So, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on at the time. I just wanted to get back to work. You know, I had my guys in my shift calling me all the time, and you know, you got this stuff going on here, riots going on there, you know, because of the 9/11 stuff. And so there was a lot of other things going on. It kind of took my mind off of what I was going through. And I healed pretty good. I have a few memories of it, you know, but overall, and like I say, I know I keep getting back to the writing, but I really credit the writing with I think helping me through any type of PTSD that I may have suffered from, because it really just kind of pushed me along and, you know, just escape reality for a little bit and kind of get in the world of journalism and you know, so.
Well, I think that there's no doubt in my mind that it is in essence self therapy. You know, when yep. You know, when I was writing my book A Cop's Life, I had to dig deep into my soul to write some of those stories. And
great book.
thank you. But you know, and while I was writing that book, my father was dying.
My gosh!
And so I was sitting in the hospital room, and so for some reason, you know, it's The Cop's Life is a fairly dark book, because during that time period, that's where my mind went, was towards those stories that held that darkness, and yet I can tell you that writing them released much of the pain that those incidents brought on. And so I couldn't agree more that it's a great catharsis, whether anybody ever reads it or not. Just the fact of putting it on paper can have a tremendous liberating effect.
Randy, I agree with you 100,000%. I mean, it for me, and obviously for you, I mean, it did us both a lot of good. I mean, you know, there's a lot of police escape to the bottle, you know, because they have no other outlet, I guess. They don't like to write, maybe, or they don't even think about it. And I've seen that so much, like you have, over the years, you know, about how police escape, what they do to escape, you know, the the rigors of working with the dark side of society. I mean, you're all day, everything's negative, and you go home and you have issues at home, and you know, after a while it just keeps eating away. You get a lot of police suicides, you know, alcoholism, drug abuse, and but you know, I think to with you pushing these books and having police come out of their shell, maybe, I don't know how else to explain it, and write stories for you and just take a shot, I think it's great. I think it's for me, you know, writing the first True Blue book and writing a story for that was, that just pushed me, and getting published actually pushed me into keep going, you know, and but I tell you, for me, I think it saved my life, to be honest with you. I really do. And I know I keep talking about your first book, the first True Blue book, but it did wonders for me, Randy. It started me, actually, you know, in the career of writing. And I know it's been a long time, but now I'm into it full time. And I got my third, I'm doing a prequel to the Pulsal Prose, and about halfway through with it right now. So I'm into it now, brother. I'm going strong.
That's fantastic. You know, the one of the things that that I have seen over the years is the effect of my books on others, and that was not yep. something that I considered when I was writing them. But I have, over the years, I've had no less than 25 police officers contact me and tell me that they were contemplating suicide until they read the books. Some of them were A Cop's Life, some of them were the True Blue books. And the reason that they told me was because they thought that they were alone in their feelings, and those books revealed right. to them that they were not.
That's you know, you become hopeless. You know, your life becomes like it's like hopeless. You know, like there's nowhere to turn. And yours and reading these things and knowing that there's others out there, like you said, that's the catalyst for you know, feeling better. And you know, but anyway, like I said, you're the one that basically, in a roundabout way, got me going. And I want to thank you, Randy, for being my friend. And you know, I'm honored to know you. And I mean, not just because, you know, I'm pushing a book or something like that, but I tell you, you actually, I think, in a way, kind of saved my life in a roundabout way. But
that's
going
a pretty,
the way you're going, brother.
That's an amazing thing to say, and it's an amazing thing to hear, I got to tell you. So you've got the two books. Where are those books? How can somebody purchase the books from?
You know, my goal in this whole thing, you know, obviously I'm never going to become rich and famous, but you know what? I just like to.
You never know, Mike.
You know, Randy, but you watch TV and you watch cable news networks, and everyone on there has got a book, and they've got the greatest audiences to promote. They're the right. It's like they're doing infomercials every time they do a news broadcast. You got these multimillionaires that, you know, they put out a book, and you know, all of a sudden it's a national bestseller. You've got these celebrities that don't know what they're talking about, half of them, and they've got books out there and they're selling like crazy because of who they are. I just wanted to kind of like show people that you don't have to be rich and famous to be successful. And I'm not, like I said, I know I'll never be rich and famous, but I would like to be successful and just, you know, put some books out there because, you know, it's just what I want to do. And the books right now, both books, the first one I published, A Teardrop for Rose, that's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. And it's soon to be out on audio. It's just going through Amazon's final stages right now as far as the audio goes.
Oh, that's great.
So hopefully in a week. It's kind of cool because Amazon has a number of narrators that they assign, and you get to pick one. But this guy sounds really, really interesting. He does like accents, like different language accents and things like that, which is, I thought, was pretty cool. But that'll be out, like I say, you can buy it right now on Amazon.com, or you can get it on Kindle, excuse me, and pretty soon on audio. Now, the Pulsal Prose, the most recent book, which we're only like a month apart, another recently published book, is out on, same thing, as Amazon.com. It is also on Kindle, and this one is already on audio. So The Puzzle Pros, A Detective Story, is out in all the phases. So
that's great. So yeah. Amazon.com, they could probably put in your name, Mike Summers, and bring up all your books, right?
Well, actually, my legal name is E. Michael Summers, and that's what I write the books under, E. Michael Summers. But I'm sure
it does have a nice educated ring to it, E. Michael Summers. It does.
You know, it's actually I was named after my dad and I were Eugenes. And when I was growing up, my dad and I didn't know who my mom was yelling at. So they started calling me Mike. So that's pretty much how that went. But I just did my legal name for the writing. And like I say, I guess if you put the last name in Summers, it's like the season with an S. You know, they'll come up. But just remember The Puzzle Pros, A Detective Story. And the other one, A Teardrop for Rose. And I've been getting a lot of great feedback. Unfortunately, people buy the books on Amazon, but they don't review them. A lot of people don't know you can review the books after you purchase them.
You know, that's a good point. So for all my listeners who are going to get Mike's book, please make sure you go onto Amazon and review the books, because that really means a lot to an author, both for personal feedback and also because it also drives interest in the books themselves. So any last thoughts that you'd like the audience to know?
Randy, I just want to, you've given me the opportunity to talk about my books, and I just want to tell you, keep going the way you're going, brother, because without you, policing in America would be lost. You tell it like it is, and that's the way it should be told. You know, all this political correctness is ridiculous, you know what I mean? Just keep going the way you're going, and I'm looking forward to submitting another story for your third True Blue book. I've been published in the first two, so maybe I can break a record and get three in a row.
You just might know somebody, Mike. You just might.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so, Randy, but listen, I still have my pictures of the book signing we did in Vegas years ago, and you know, I'm just proud to know you, and thanks for the opportunity of letting me talk about my books and my life a little bit, and I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, are you on any social media platforms that my listeners can contact you?
Right now, I'm working on getting my own webpage, and we're putting it together right now. I am on Facebook. And I am doing a little article for my Facebook friends, and hopefully they'll share it with their friends. But that will be coming soon. You know, this is all kind of just building up steam right now. So, I just under my name.
Is it under Mike Summers?
Yes.
Okay, so go on Facebook, go to Mike Summers, Summers, and say hello to Mike.
I appreciate it, Randy. Pretty soon, like I said, I'm going to have something going. It's just like I said, everything's kind of going kind of quickly here. So, but listen, brother, thanks again, and just keep up your good work.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Yeah, if you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it stinkyvest.com. That's the company. And they arrest odors. I love it. And this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of you know, odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at stinkyvest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and they uh,
It eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's stinkyvest.com. And you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile. Anything that I can do to make law enforcement lives better, safer, and more effective, you can count me in. And I got to tell you about an incredible investigative tool that I have discovered. For those detectives involved in any criminal activity, investigations, and crime analysts too, this is amazing. And it's got a couple different uses. I mean, you can use it for conspiracies, you can use it for murder investigations, drug investigations, trafficking humans. It was originally created for IED investigations, that's improvised explosive devices, in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the owner, the president of this company, which is Blue Light LLC, that's Blue Light LLC, is a retired Green Beret Sergeant Major. And they use this stuff very effectively. It is now available to police agencies, big and small. And I got to tell you, I've seen it in use. It is amazing. It's Blue Light LLC, okay? And any criminal investigation where you want to gather the evidence and show the connections to people, this is the product. I've seen it. It's amazing. And these people do incredible work with it. They train you up in it. And it's for big agencies, small agencies. It's being used all over the country. It's in conjunction with IBM. This is amazing, amazing software. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, and that's bluelightllc.com. Check it out, and this will solve crimes and save lives. If you are in law enforcement, you're in the investigative analysis branch, or you're a detective, there is going to be an amazing conference I'm going to be attending. In fact, I'm going to be one of the keynote speakers. It is the Information to Intelligence Summit. That's information, then the number 2, intelligencesummit.com. And this is going to be a three-day event. It's going to be in Denver, Colorado. It's got some phenomenal classes, speakers. And if you are in the law enforcement community, you really should check this out. You're going to get exposed to some major investigative opportunities here as far as learning some institutional knowledge and given some great tools. So once again, it's going to be in Denver, Colorado, and it is going to be May 8th through 11th. May 8th through 11th in Denver, Colorado. Go to Information to Intelligence Summit.com. Information to Intelligence Summit.com. And I'll see you in Denver in May.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have two names to read. The first is Corporal Dale Hallman of the Saluda County Sheriff's Office in South Carolina. Corporal Dale Hallman was killed in a single vehicle crash on Penn Creek Road while responding to a call at approximately 1 a.m. His patrol car left the roadway and overturned while he was en route to provide canine support in search of a subject who had fled into a wooded area. Corporal Hallman, who also served as a lieutenant with the Saluda County Fire Department, served with the Saluda County Sheriff's Office for more than 5 years. He is survived by his expectant wife and 2 children. Corporal Dale Hallman, Saluda County Sheriff's Office, South Carolina. End of watch, April 16th, 2018. The second police officer to die in the line of duty is Police Officer Keith Earl of the Huntsville Police Department in Alabama. Police Officer Keith Earl succumbed to injuries sustained in a vehicle crash that occurred on March 26, 2018 at the intersection of Pulaski Pike and Grizzard Road. He was transported to Huntsville Hospital, where his condition deteriorated until he passed away on April 9th. Officer Earl had served with the Huntsville Police Department for 25 years. Police Officer Keith Earl, Huntsville Police Department, end of watch, April 9th, 2018. May these officers rest in peace. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. I enjoy having guests on. I hope that you enjoy it as well. You can follow me on Facebook if you go to Randy Sutton, public figure, and just like and follow. I do a lot of my posting every single day on that venue. And also, if you are a Twitterer, at LT Randy Sutton. That's at LT Randy Sutton. That's on Twitter. And I'm going to do a few more social medias as well. I'm also on LinkedIn. So if you want to hook up on LinkedIn, check me out there. So thanks again for listening in on this week's episode. And I'll see you again next week.